Loopy, I'd like to begin by asking you about your grandparents. If you would tell me about your mother's parents first.
Oh, my grandparents. Well, I was not very fortunate because, my mother's father died when she was 2. And her mother died when she was 13.
Where did they live?
In Mexico. And my father, he was much older than my mother, and his parents were long dead even before his first marriage. My mother was his second wife, and she was so about half his age. So I never got to know any grandparents from either one of the two. I would have loved to.
What part of Mexico was your mother from?
Guadalajara.
Did she talk about her childhood there at all?
Yes. When we went on a visit, she used to, point out places to me, where they used to live or what they did, and parts of the city which is now are now nice modern parks where they used to go on picnics then, and things like that. Mm-hmm.
What did your grandfather do there? Do you know?
His father, my mother's
father. Your mother's father?
He was a tailor. He was a tailor. And I don't know what my father's father was. They were merchants. They had a store. They had a store downtown, a general store. Mm-hmm. He and his wife. And of course, this may not fit into that, but what I've heard from the family, their life was very interesting way back in the years where there were so many Spanish settlers there, mostly Spanish settlers. And my cousins used to show me, where the grandparents used to live. So the store used to be here, and the store is right in the middle of downtown. Their house, my cousin got to see the house when it was being demolished to build a building which was the Spanish club later. Mm-hmm. And that was demolished too, and now it's a big office buildings or something like that. And they showed me where they had the hacienda, their huge hacienda, and I think they had the first textile mills and in this part of South America. They didn't believe they could graze cotton, but they did, because Guadalajara, the state of Jalisco, is very semi-tropical. But anyway, they grew cotton, and they had a textile mill there. And
now your family wasn't involved with the mill, or was it?
Yes, yes. It was theirs. He had this vast acreage, the hacienda just took miles. And of course, during the revolution, they lost everything.
This is your father?
My father's father. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did they talk about the revolution?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It lasted for so many years, going to, I think, maybe generations. After my father died and we came, the revolution still was on. And of course, my father died when I was just barely a toddler. And his property was also confiscated, and lost his business, and what was left, some Austrian furniture that my father bought for my mother when they got married. That was sold, and that's what paid for our pass on the train passage to come up north, up to Texas border, El Paso. And there was a little money from that even that was not enough. They just barely bought the ticket for my brother. My brother was 13, I think about 12, 13, and my mother. But there was not enough money for me. So I came in hidden under my mother's skirts. You know, they wore this long skirts, flare skirts. And I was, anytime the conductor came by, you know, I was hiding under her skirt, under her legs. And I remember, I have very good memory. I remember when I was a baby and I was crawling, and I remember those things. And I remember she says, come on, it's time for you to get in here. I said, why do I have to come in? You know, I wonder, why do I have to sit there? Get right in there. And I was waiting. I was a very obedient child. Not a peep out of that, you know, not a peep, so don't you make any sound. You just stay there until I tell you, you can come out. And I didn't come out, didn't make a sound until, I guess, the conductor went by. And, many incidents like that.
Do you know how your grandmother supported herself and your mother?
Oh, she had a very talented sister. My mother had a very talented sister. She was an artist and a scholar, which is a brilliant woman. She could do the most beautiful hand lace and embroidery just out of this world. And she would make these embroideries for special occasions like weddings or frames, you know, they have all these elaborate embroideries and or handmade lace. And at the same time she was studying, and she was studying for opera. She was an operatic singer. And although she was not a professional, but any time her teacher gave a presentation of some sort, you know, she'd get some sort of like an award, you know, maybe like 2-3 gold coins or something like that. And that's what helped them. You know, in those days, the women were not trained to be other than wives and mothers. So her mother did some sewing also, some work, special dish for someone that needed a special dish for a party or something, you know, just things like that. Mm-hmm. So they just pulled together what they could. And it was the two older daughters, and my mother was the youngest one. And the oldest one got married and left town, and they never heard from her anymore. They don't know what happened to her. She left town, they never got a letter from her, they never heard a word from her. Something, mishap or an accident or something, but they never heard from her. Mm. And the one that used to be so talented, the one time after a performance singing, it was a very warm day, they say, and she had a very cold drink, and then she got sort of like a laryngitis from there. And from that laryngitis developing a sort of pneumonia, and before you know it, she was gone in a few days. So then they left my mother. My mother was the youngest one, and she used to go in, and she quit school. She had to go and do a little menial work, you know, washing dishes, helping somebody, you know, do the housework, because her mother began to get sick with arthritis. She had a very severe arthritis. I think it was more like a gout, because all her fingers and everything was gnarled. And my mother nursed her, and she went out and did what little work she could for both of them, supported her. I always admire my mother for that. I thought it was the greatest thing. This child of 12, she was 13 when she died, this child of 12 taking care of her mother, bedridden, mm-hmm. and then run out with the neighbor here, neighbor there, do this, a little work here, a little work there, and come and tidy up their little rooms and tend to her mother. And I thought it was just something so admirable. So devoted, and then I think some of these things that the kids nowadays, they don't care about. Mm-hmm. They don't care about their parents, or they you're killing yourself to give them a college education, and here she is making a living to feed her mother. And I admired that particular thing in my mother so much. I felt that I could never, from that aspect, from that standpoint, I could never hope to come up to the level of the greatness in her, her devotion, her sense of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so, as far as I know, and then after her mother died, when she went, I think she worked in a, hotel, one of the nicest hotels in that. As a matter of fact, it still stands at the Phoenix Hotel, because changed owners and changed management. But she was very efficient, and she, although she was the youngest, she was in charge of more like the hotel housekeeper, in charge of the others.
Who did she live with after her mother died?
She lived alone. She supported herself and lived alone, and until she married my father. He was quite older than she was, probably more than twice her age.
Mm-hmm. How old was she when she married?
I think she was about 18. When she found out, she didn't know that he had been married before. Mm-hmm. And when she found out, you know, she was so hurt and so angry that he didn't tell her. And then she just left the city, and she came up north to El Paso. The first time she came, in those days, there were no passports. People just went across back and forth. Americans and Mexicans just went across the border, which is like an ordinary wooden bridge then. And she stayed out here for over a year. And my father actually became ill in bed, heartbroken, because she left. And when she went back, you know, they were married, and they were my brother, and she had my brother some time later, and then myself. And I think he must have been about 9. You know, my mother didn't think she was going to have any more children. And here I come after 9 years. Although she was very young, she thought she must have very early menopause because she was very young. And no, he was me.
What are your parents' names?
My father's name was Luis.
Luis?
Uh-huh. Luis Romero. And my mother's Celerina Rodriguez.
And what did your father do in Mexico when they were married?
Oh, my father was an excellent craftsman in shoes. I don't mean just a shoemaker or just ordinary cobbler. He was a master in his trade. He could make shoes like orthopedic shoes, boots, ballet shoes, you name it, any kind of footwear, he knew it. He knew even how to tan the leather, tan it, dye it, press it, or whatever they do to the sole to make it very, you know, I think they press it to make it very, very durable to the hide. So he was an excellent craftsman. He made shoes.
Did he come from a large family?
Yes, yes. I think he had 5 brothers and a sister. Mm-hmm. And his parents were settlers from Spain, the early settlers in Guadalajara. And I think his mother died. His mother died when I'm the last child, and the youngest girl. She died in childbirth. And then, being that he was the oldest one, he did a race, helped finish raising his brothers.
How did your parents meet?
Well, I guess in functions when her sister used to sing, I think he attended some of the events, some of the performances. And he knew them, you know, sort of just like friends, someone that you know. And then, of course, she was someone very, very young, you know, she just knew just by sight, because being as she was younger, she didn't have much conversation, mm-hmm. anything to do with him. Then, you know, and then she grew up and he began to notice her. I used to tell her, my mother says, because they had a lot of trouble because he had his, from his first wife, he had four boys, and they, I think one of them, the older one, was even actually older than my mother. And they had a lot of disputes and sometimes real heated quarrels on account of the boys. The boys would not accept her because she's a stepmother. And I used to tell her, you know, I said, but how did you manage, how did you marry this older man with those boys? They gave you so much trouble. So, well, in the beginning, I didn't know he had them. But, you know, when he used to come around, you know, in those days, the men didn't come in. They just talked through the iron rails through the window. And when he used to come, it's a nice, just then go around the corner, and he was just like a prince. Maybe I'll find a picture shortly.
Okay.
He was so handsome, tall, straight, and he wore this Spanish capes, you know, velvet, silk velvet, with gold on the outside, all gold on the outside, red on the inside. And she said, when he used to walk around, just kind of stand in the corner and just drape that cape. And so he went around with that cape there, just standing there, so I just went crazy. Nothing else mattered. And I see his picture, said, oh, I can understand. And he was so good to her. He just adored her. She never remarried because she compared, every man that she met, she compared it to him. Just no, not like your father. Nobody was like my father. And he was everything that a woman wants, everything that a woman wants in a man. Loving, dependable, very conscientious. And he was the one that, you know, I suppose he felt that because he had these other boys, that he sort of made things easier for her. And she never got up. Just when the children were sick, I never got up at night to nurse them. He'd get up. No, don't you get up. Don't you get up. I'll get up. And he was so efficient in so many things. He had a big medicine chest, he said. Big, it was like a room in those days. You know, they didn't have little cabinets like we have now. They had rooms. Like he had a room for all the sacks of food and all the food supplies and everything. So in the same way, he had his room for his medicines. He always knew what to do for the family, for the kids, or even the animals. The animals, they had cows and horses. If one of the animals got sick, he'd know what to do. He'd know what to do. So she just never tired telling me all these things, and sometimes I think they knew so much, so you ended up not knowing anything. And of course, in a way, I when he was on his deathbed, he used to cry. He just used to cry so much, actually, and tell my mother, she said, what hurts me the most is my... He called me, Hitos de Capulin. Hitos de Capulin means, in Mexico they have cherries. It's a type of a cherry, but they're small and they are black and shiny. Mm. And my eyes were very black then. He used to call me Hitos de Capulin. What hurts me the most is my baby, my Hitos de Capulin. She's going to suffer the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is gone, everything's spent, I won't be here, and you'll be alone, and she's the youngest, and there'll be nothing left for her. And she's going to suffer all the hardships. And sure enough, that's the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it happened. because then there was a revolution going on, and like I said before, you know, she sold everything she had and came up north after he died.
What made her decide to come up here?
Well, she felt that, you know, some of the relatives also quite never did accept her because she was the other woman, and never did quite accept her, and what little there was left, there was supposed to be a ranch that was left, and he made a mistake of not getting a good lawyer to take care of it. You know, he just gathered all the family. The ranch, the remains, as if that's only for the young ones, which would have been his youngest son and my brother and myself. That's to be divided among them. And then he has some beautiful, beautiful rare books in a bookcase, beautiful cabinet, Spanish carved bookcase. Those books belong to Ildefonso, would be my brother. He was a scholar too, brilliant, brilliant. And the books were from my brother. Well, and all the machinery, the shop machinery, was for my mother to help her with, you know, her expenses she had coming. That's all she would have, because that was all sold, most of it, you know, during his illness. But anyway, what was left, he sold his son, one of the oldest sons, which he never liked her. He took possession of everything. He went and got himself this shyster lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And he got him to change the falsified documents, and he got the land, and he took all the books. He got the keys where they had the books and a chest and things of value that was left. So my mother was, you know, Spanish ancestry, we're very proud, very proud. And she said, I'm not going to fight over this. I don't need it. I don't have to fight away anything. Mm-hmm. I don't need any of these things. You can keep them. She just sold her furniture with, you know, the settee, a smaller settee like that, mm-hmm. and some of the chairs, Austrian furniture. And she sold it, and that was for the train passive, and she just took off more of a hurt pride, and she said, well, I don't have to be telling them how I'm going to live my life, and when I'm telling them, well, come and live with us, and they was come and live with us, mm-hmm. but she already knew what kind of a life she was going to be. She was going to be their servant,
mm-hmm.
and of course, we were going to be there like, in Spanish, we have a certain term that you don't use in English. They call him arrimados. An arrimado is not a servant. Does not belong to the family. And it's like something that just sort of hangs around there and then lends a hand here and there for the food that they eat. So she said, I'm not going to be anybody's arrimados, and neither are my children. So just like that, you know, she was a very fast, decisive woman. I just take my children and go somewhere else. If somebody kicks me around, it won't be my own. I can take that better. So that's what she did. She came out here, and she came to El Paso, and she found work doing whatever she could do. She had worked in the hotel, like I said before. She went to work in the hotel for a while. Times were hard there also. Also, I think she was so stunned, so heartbroken of my father's death, that she just couldn't, because I asked her, I said, you had done such and such work or this and that. I said, why didn't you continue doing that? She said, well, she said, I was so stunned and in such state of mind that I couldn't even think straight. I had gone through so much that I just couldn't think straight. I just did anything that I could, you know, just to keep us alive.
What did your father die from?
Well, I don't think she knew either. During the revolution, you know, they used to be this general against this general, and somebody's going take the presidency, and then somebody gets knocked out, and another one takes over, just like it's going now in Salvador or some of those countries. Not quite as bad, but it's something like that. And I understand my father had gone to on business to San Pedro now, which is called Tlaquepaque now. It always has been, but right now you can take a taxi or you can go on the bus within 20 minutes or so, 20 minutes, 25 minutes.
What's the name of it again?
Tlaquepaque, San Pedro Tlaquepaque. It's in the suburbs of Guadalajara. Mm-hmm. But in those days, it's like going out in the country. You know, you go in the country. So he used to go on his horse or a carriage. He went on to make some delivery. On the way back, there were these fighters, you know, the rebels, mm-hmm. like one group against the other, shooting at each other. He got caught in between. And he tried to dodge bullets, all the way. At the same time, he was carrying food for the family in a sack. He was bringing a big cheese and a lot of food, what food he could carry. And at the same time, carrying this big load and dodging the bullets, hiding, you know, the best he could. As he got to the house, my mother said he just collapsed at the doorstep. So I don't know whether he had affected his heart or what. But he just collapsed at the doorstep. He was picked up and put on the bed. And from then on, he was sick and sick and sick and sick. And he had the doctors examine him, and nobody could find out what was the matter with him. Said that it was a nervous shock or something in his spine, because I don't know what they did some cauterization on the spine. I don't know what. I think in those days they used to do it to sort of activate the nerve into, I don't know, some sort of reaction. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that didn't help. And he was sick like that for over a year, and he passed, but I don't think that anybody really knew what was the actual trouble.
Do you remember hearing stories about your birth?
Where oh, yeah, sure.
Will you tell me about it?
Oh, well, like I say, you know, my mother didn't know she was she was expecting. And the only reason she knew, she said she was always very active and very healthy, and some 3-4 months at best, she hadn't had her period, and she didn't think nothing of it. You know, maybe some disorder, but she didn't give it any importance. And this ranch I'm telling you about, you know, that the oldest son got, they were living there in that ranch at that time, and my mother had gone out into the nearby town. She used to go out for a walk and to bring flowers or fresh vegetables or whatever. And when she came back, one of the workers in the ranch was trying to get some money out of my father. He threatened him, you know, that either he gave him some money, you know, he was holding him up, actually. He was a worker, but he decided, you know, he needed money. I guess he was kind of drunk. He said, "You either give me the money or I'm going to kill you now." And he had a hoe. He was threatening to kill him. And at that time, my father called my mother, just as she was arriving, says, "Go over, you know, the next door neighbors, go to so-and-so, whatever the name was, and tell them to send the gendarmes, which would be the police. And, but run." And he was trying to put the guy off, you know, fight him off. And my mother went running, and just as she was running, then she got, her stomach was very upset. She began to get sick to her stomach. The fright and everything, and she came back home, and then, you know, she had like the morning sick that you normally have, but very severe. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor had examined her and told her she was pregnant. But that was the only time, and probably it was on account of the fright that brought it on, and she realized she was pregnant then. That's the only indication she had up to that point.
You said your brother was 9 years older?
Mm-hmm.
Had she had miscarriages
no.
in between?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.